Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome back to the Center for Internet Security podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are, where we take on topics of the day and get to talk to interesting people about some of the things that are affecting the cyber world. I'm joined today by a special guest, Phil Reitinger of the Global Cyber Alliance. Welcome, Phil.
Morning, Tony. Good to see you.
Yeah, a pleasure. And we're going to talk about Phil and I, for the audience, are both heavily involved in the nonprofit cyber world. And the topic today is another cause that Phil has taken on called Common Good Cyber. So we'll talk about that, get a little of Phil's background and his thinking and perspective. And we hope this will open up some eyes and maybe inspire some of you to action. So Phil, you and I go back quite a ways, and I think of you as one of my friends with like a real career. You've worked pretty much everywhere, you know, private sector, government, nonprofits, have covered the landscape from top to bottom in the cyber industry. Tell the audience a little bit about your background, kind of what brought you to this point in your life.
I made my cybersecurity bones, if you will, back in the 1990s, Tony, you know, going on, 30 years ago, when I was the number six prosecutor in what became the Computer Crime and Intellectual Property section at the Department of Justice. But back then was just the Computer Crime Unit of the General Litigation and Legal Advice section. You know, my background was I'm a lawyer, but I'm also an engineer. And so I gravitated, once I was able to get to the computer crime section, I gravitated towards a career in cybersecurity. And that's what I've been doing, you know, pretty much for the last 30 years. I spent time at Microsoft and Sony. And I think, although I may be wrong on this, I think I'm the only person that I know of who had relatively senior cybersecurity roles in the Department of Justice, the Department of Defense, and the Department of Homeland Security, because I, at some point in my career, went through all three of those. And for the last 8 years, I've been the president and CEO of the Global Cyber Alliance, a global nonprofit working in cybersecurity that was founded by a number of organizations, including your organization, the Center for Internet Security. So it's been a long career, and the last 20 have been focused, at least to some extent, on collective cyber defense, collected automated defense. And so maybe we'll talk a little bit about that too, since that's an interest of both of ours.
Yeah, Phil, one of the things we share, we both kind of worked, I'll say, at the top of government in this kind of work and for really large institutions. And we find ourselves, you know, in the later parts of our career in nonprofit space. So what led you to the nonprofit world? I mean, it's, you know, you go from major organizations, large budgets, sort of large profile to relatively small activity, right? And in terms of numbers of people and dollars and so forth. And I know what took me there. How about you?
I'd say, you know, I'm not Bill Gates rich, you know, or even Ron Gula rich or any of those sorts of things, right? I haven't sold a startup for hundreds of millions of dollars. But I've been relatively comfortable. I had a good career in the government and the private sector. And you get to a point where you know, any big organization is going to involve a lot of trade-offs. And mostly your time is not your own. You're doing the things that other people say you have to do. Maybe that's different if you're a cabinet level secretary, but I never got to that level either. And you know, I found as I got, you know, closer to the end of my career that I was really passionate about a few things. And the big thing I was most passionate about is actually trying to get things done. One of my catchphrases, if you will, is I've been in this meeting before. And I found that, you know, when I was in bigger institutions, I could almost always say I've been in this meeting before. You know, it's like everything has been said, but not everyone has said it. So now we have to wait for everybody to say everything again. And then we'll go out and the metric for success will be we had a good meeting. Right. And that's not what I wanted to do anymore. What I wanted to do was really try to make a difference, maybe work on smaller things that had a potential to scale. And you know, that's what the Global Cyber Alliance GCA that I'm the head of is really about. It's about finding projects, programs that actually can work at internet scale and trying to give them the oomph to go forward when on their own, they would not. Where, you know, it really does take a village. It takes some injection from committed people to make something real.
Right. And I think that, you know, it's a similar thought process that brought me to my place here and is, you know, part of the watchword of the Center for Net Security. You know, once we started to see the scope of positive attributes of having the kind of job you've had, you get to see the nation at large, right? See the scope of the problem and you see the struggles to deal with it. But you also see everyone wants to solve world hunger in one meeting or in one plan or with one document. And, you know, that, as you said, we've been there in that meeting. And, you know, that was a conclusion I reached at a similar stage in life. It's like, there are a lot of important things to be done, but if you try to do them all at once, you're paralyzed. And so better to pick a few things that are in that are directionally true and that are foundational for others to build upon. And I think that's a really satisfying part of it. So speaking of this passion of yours, tell me about Common Good Cyber and what led you to think about that as an important effort. And just for the audience, I had the opportunity to attend the workshop that you hosted in DC recently. And I just found it amazing and energizing. But tell me what you were thinking.
So I can't claim credit for this. I'm going to give credit to the community. So it all started about a year and a half ago. We work pretty closely with Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist. He helps fund us. And we were one of his strategies is what he likes to call cyber civil defense, which is the notion that we really need a whole of society effort around cybersecurity, that everybody has a role to play and everybody has to fulfill that role. And we've got to make it possible for them to do that. So Craig, of course, has deeper roots in the US. And so we did some meetings around the world to talk about that notion in other places. And we did one in Brussels. And it was a good group, around 30 people or so. And just talking in the room, it was super interesting. All of the nonprofits there told the same story, which is funding. Look, we're, for example, involved in lots of things that are essential to the modern running of the internet. But funding for cybersecurity is almost non-existent for when we're working in the public interest. And when it doesn't exist, it's to build the next new good thing, you know, not to maintain the stuff that we all need to continue to operate. You know, things like the work that Shadow Server does as the registrar of last resort, things like MITRE does with creating and maintaining the MITRE attack profile, all the ground, you know, from really operational concrete stuff to policy stuff, and includes things like that have reached a lot more currency lately, like people think about open source now, you know, particularly since Log4j. So I don't know if you've seen it or your readers have seen it, but there's this XKCD cartoon that was been very popular. It says at the top, it says all modern digital infrastructure, right? And it's this huge superstructure with a big thing on the left. And then like on the right, there's this one little block sticking up without which the whole thing falls over. And it says like, you know, one piece of code that somebody in Nebraska has been maintaining thanklessly since 2005, right? The sad thing is not only is that true, it's not just that one piece of code, right? There are large numbers of services, platforms, code that really are essential to the way we work now, the way we keep people safe, the way we support cybersecurity for the common good in the public interest. And so Common Good Cyber came out of that. Happy to tell a longer story, but you know, we started getting the group together, and it came to be that people said there's been efforts to fix this in the past, right? You know, because what we lack are really funding models that keep these organizations doing the things that they need to do, that support them, you know, not to be rich, right? you and I are not, you know, we're not doing startups, right? This is not to make people rich, but it's to actually get the key stuff done that needs to be done. And so we were tired of dropping the bucket efforts. We had a good discussion, and we had a planning meeting at the Canadian Embassy in DC that I think four governments attended in July of last year. And the idea was that we wanted to do something more enduring. We wanted to actually spin up some interest, public interest and government and commercial interest around trying to solve this problem. And then not just, you know, end the workshop or whatever and say, well, we had a good meeting. You know, many things were learned. Now let's go on and pretend we didn't learn anything. Right? So the goal was to try and do something more concrete to try and solve the problems. And that led to the Common Good Cyber Initiative that was launched at this workshop at the National Press Club on the 26th and 27th of February.
Yeah, and that, you know, your observations, and yeah, they're great cartoons, but they turn out to be true. And, you know, one of the strengths of the internet world that we grew up in here is this distributed nature, right? If we waited for, a top-down government committee to design and implement it all, we'd still be waiting. But we got this sort of community-driven, lots of object reuse, right? Reuse of open source code and common protocols and all that. And so it's amazing. But it's also created this fragile, complex ecosystem of things that all have to work and by and large do until they fail. And also this, one of my taglines, Phil, is we've built our infrastructure on the cheap. You know, we have all these pieces, but we haven't really paid for them, you know, through goodwill, through pass the hat, whatever, you know, lots of things have come together in a really astounding way, but, you know, it's trite but true, right? We have deliberately built interdependency as a model. What we haven't faced is the real cost of interdependency, all these really foundational pieces of code or bits of protocols or services that are running that, frankly, are invisible to most of the populace, right? We just sort of assume the machinery is running. But without a central kind of authority, and I don't think there ever will be one, but a top-down, single funding model, single policy authority, you know, that has its own problems. And I think we're kind of at this stage where we really need to face up to some of these costs. Say you mentioned Log4j, you know, security incidents prove to us every day of this interdependency, right? This need for the common good. And so let me ask you, Phil. So, you know, we're in a time of...
Let me just react to you on one thing about please, that, Tony, if please. I might. Because first off, that's absolutely right. You know, the internet's unlike anything we've ever seen, right? You know, in almost every other infrastructure, the ultimate responsibility to make sure it continues to operate rolls up to somebody or some set of somebodies that is at least a little knowable, right? Or it's segmentable in a way, like it stops at a national border and then you can cover the international pieces with treaties. The internet's not like that, right? It's got this, as you say, this multi-stakeholder model where we depend on contributions from everybody. That's absolutely right. And that's great, right? Nobody, well, at least not me, right? Most people, I don't think, want to get rid of that. They like the freedom. They like the growth. They like the opportunity. But that comes with costs. And the cost is, what's the model for making sure the things that need to get done, get done? So, you know, when we have highways and a highway system, right, you know, ultimately that runs up to governments, right? They're responsible for making sure that the potholes get fixed. There may be, you may adopt a highway, right? But, you know, it's not like we're not relying on volunteers to say, hey, let's go build an off-ramp for on Route 66. For, you know, Lightning McQueen or whatever. We don't rely on trucks going around with gravel to fill potholes. But that's exactly what we do on the internet. And the question then is, how do we maintain the value that goes along with that? The participatory nature, the opportunity to contribute, the public spiritedness, and the distributed governance model that helps prevent repression without also, you know, being tied to an environment where, well, you know, that guy in or a woman in Nebraska stops coding and now, you know, we don't have an IPv6 stack anymore. It's a significant problem that we have to address.
Yeah. And as you said, it's a mix of, you know, things we depend upon, but also if we don't build the right machinery, we lose opportunity, right? We lose the benefits that we gain, this incredible reach, the access to information, the, you know, the ability to express ideas and have them shared around the world. And so there's a lot of opportunity here. One of the concerns I wanted to ask you about, though, this notion of common good is a really important one, right? So you've identified some great highlights there. But, you know, we're in a time of really high social distrust. There doesn't seem to be much agreement about common anything, much less common good. Is that an issue, or, you know, do you feel like there's sort of a spirit there in terms of technology, the internet, that's binding on its own?
So I think the answer is it is different, right? You know, surely we can all agree that the level of identity politics and issues we're seeing, you know, in the United States and around the world is I won't say unprecedented, but it's unprecedented in the last 50 years, and it's a significant problem. But, you know, there are things, maybe not everybody, but most people agree on, in terms of there are fundamental human rights that people have. Like, you know, I think most people agree that everybody around the world ought to be able to eat and ought to have clean water to drink, right? You know, the sorts of things that are tied together with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And, you know, like it or not, I'd say cybersecurity is a part of that right now, because none of those other things happen without cybersecurity. You know, everybody depends on the internet to some degree. And the second thing, I mean, even if you want to say, let's move outside of this altruism, you know, frou-frou, you know, woke language about human rights, right? And let's just move over to self-interest, right? It's in everybody's self-interest to make sure that the internet is more secure. Microsoft, Google, the US, for heaven's sakes, Russia and China, right? All of these entities want some degree of control because they don't want to be subject to attack all the time. They'd like to stem down some of the stuff that at least hurts them. And the, you know, corporations would generally love to reduce the amount of badness on the internet because they could make more money and use the internet for more. So the problem is not the desire to solve these challenges. It's that it really is a collective action problem. It's a really significant market failure where you need everybody to act together, or at least really significant players to act together doing the same thing, when it's completely possible for any one of those entities to be a free rider and wait for other people to solve the problem. And so that's really the challenge. And is that a problem in today's society? For sure. But I think there's opportunity to solve it. And I think a lot of people recognize the problem needs to be solved.
Share with me. So you've talked to a number of folks, both individuals and institutional, in terms of the, let's say, the investors, right? The people who have the resources and they've shown some spirit to participate in these kind of common good activities. What's their perspective on this? Is there a focus? You gave one example of Craig Newmark and the cyber civil defense, that sort of everybody's in. But others that you've spoken to, do you feel a sense of sort of this common ownership, common problem, common opportunity?
So it varies really remarkably. I don't know if I could say there's one view. You know, you can listen to this, or your listeners can listen to the recorded audio from the Common Good Cyber event. If you want to, there's a funders panel that you can find on YouTube, right, where you'll hear the contributions from Craig Newmark, Ron Gula, Google.org, and a Microsoft representative who used to be at the Hewlett Foundation. So you can hear their perspectives, right? Like Craig would tell you, he's very interested in cyber civil defense, in protecting primarily in his case, the US, from attacks that could undermine quality of life and those sorts of things. You know, Ron Gula would probably, I don't want to stick words in his mouth, he'd probably talk about data care and the need to really protect data broadly for the things that we want. Google and Microsoft, or Google and Hewlett, would have their own pieces. Each comes at it from a slightly different angle. The challenges are that in a lot of cases, entities that have some ability to fund don't know what to fund, or they think it's outside their mission space. And even those that, you know, have some funding and want to do something may not have the specific sorts of things they can or can't do. Like, let's take CISA, for example. I think CISA would love to be able to provide more contributions to people who work in the public interest. So not everything needs to happen just in government. As much money as they've got, they don't have that money. I mean, there's not a funding stream for them. So they have funding to support the work that CIS does through the MSISAC and the EIISAC and that sort of work, which is great stuff and absolutely important. They have funding to give state and local entities with the new infrastructure grant program. Mostly they don't have discretionary funds that they could spend. You know, the only place I know of that's got a lot of discretionary funds typically is DOD, and they'd probably tell you that they don't, but they've got a lot more than anybody else. And that's true around the world. So it's like everybody sees the problem. What they lack is the ability to solve it themselves. And it's going to be a huge effort to try and create ways to bring those people together that will help them work together to solve the problem in a way that protects their equities, doesn't ask too much from them, but actually moves the ball forward.
As I listen to the funders talk in the workshop also, I think if there were an emphasis that I wish I heard more of, would be the word sustainment. Everyone's looking for a new idea, right? A new population to bring into the field, a new idea. But, you know, again, it's not as exciting to say there's basic machinery that needs funding. You heard funders say, right, well, yeah, we'll get it started, and it's kind of up to someone else to keep it going. I think that's probably a bit of an overstatement, but I heard that if there were an area that felt like it really needed more attention, it was for that kind of thing.
So I think that's exactly right, Tony. I've seen that. I've observed it. You know, as I said at the start, right, everybody wants to fund the next big thing. The new, you know, as Michael Daniel likes to say, you know, the cyber fantabulator 6,000, right? But, you know, that's the message everybody says, right? You know, and once we create this, it will go on and other people will take it over, right? You know, and the other people is, who are they? Where are they coming from? Like I like to say, you know, it's been an old saw in cybersecurity for a while that cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. You know, CISA even said that a few years ago. What people say when they mean that, or what people mean when they say that, is it's your responsibility and your responsibility. It's not my responsibility. The shared responsibility is a way to duck and look for other people to step up. And so we do have to find the ways to continue to support entities that do the things that we need to continue to have do, where it's not a new problem. And by the way, you know, if we keep the multi-stakeholder model and the internet continues to grow and tie us all together, those problems are never going away. You know, I hate to tell people that, but it's going to be an endemic challenge. We're going to have to continue to secure the internet for the future. And unless something changes remarkably in technology or changes in the control infrastructure, the internet is never going to roll up to one small collection of entities that are going to assure everything. It's going to take a village, but a village with some focus and some cash.
Yeah, I think that is right, is that we're building the machinery, right, of our economies, of our, you know, social lives, you know, of our warfighting machinery, frankly. And these all are items that need sustainment. I think one of the things, the impressions I got from the workshop and the work that you and I have done in the nonprofit space is to see some nominally invisible areas, you know, sort of brought to the surface that we can look at and go, oh my goodness, what would we do without that? And I think there's a lot of this sort of invisibility, right? By the way, most of the nonprofits are these little bits of, you know, open source here and there. They don't have PR machines. They don't have marketing departments. No one sees them. And so I think you've provided great value in sort of highlighting some of these. And part of it is, you know, the way you organize the workshop, right? To have the funders there, to have government people there, industry people, you know, lonely souls who are, have a cause, all in the room at the time to kind of recognize this dependency. And it certainly opened my eyes, you know, a number of the folks that I met, and just thought, my goodness, so we wouldn't be operational today if not for, you know, pick this example or pick that example, or this area would be completely neglected without this group of people or this nonprofit over there. And I think that is a tremendous, has the opportunity to help sort of deal with some of these mismatches, right, of recognizing importance and then aligning them with someone's interest to provide resources or support or partnership. You know, you and I both are in nonprofit space, and we deal a lot with fellow nonprofits. And it just strikes me the passion, the intensity, you know, the care that people bring to these is often not matched by resources and business machinery. You know, that is the ability to grow. I felt like, as I talked to a number of the nonprofits there, they're below what I would call an inflection point. They're not big enough to have the real machinery to either seek funding or to even manage it. And they wind up spending too much of on sort of the reporting part of it, right? The sort of machinery of, you know, that comes with the getting of resources. Is that fair? I mean, for the Center for Internet Security, we're sort of past that point. And I don't know that every business model will support that, but we've been able to get past the point where we can sort of find funding through a model, but also then manage growth, which seems to be a rare thing. Is that fair? So the point I was trying to get to was, sorry for the long-winded question, but is it strictly a matter of money, or are there other resources or attributes that these well-intentioned folks need for success that we can help identify through all this?
So it's not strictly a matter of money. That's quite true, Tony. It's an oddly structured environment. And that's like one of the solutions that was discussed at great length in the workshop was to have an accelerator or a resource hub for nonprofits that could help them reach maturity in some of these spaces more quickly without having to reinvent the wheel. Another one was to do joint fundraising. So, you know, sort of like the United Way. You know, not everybody knows what the United Way contributes to, but you know, if you did some joint fundraising and said, here's a bunch of nonprofits, all of them that do essential things, give some money to the collection and it will be well spent, right? So those are a couple of different approaches that might work in this space. We can't just say, you know, money doesn't solve all problems. I think some money is necessary to help solve this problem, but there also need to be other pieces that go along with it.
No, I agree exactly. And the point you made, by the way, I wouldn't disagree with your premise that we actually need more money in this. It's just, I think there's, and there will never be 100% efficiency. We want efficiency. Maybe we should try communism, but I don't think I like the side benefits of that either. But I think this thinking about different models is a really important part of this and a lot of which came out at that workshop. And so, you know, Phil, in the interest of time here, I think that what I'd like to do is, Let's wind up the discussion here and come back for a part two in this, because there's a lot more to talk about. And I think there's a lot more about ideas that would be beneficial for our audience. So with that, we'll wrap up part one of this discussion of Common Good Cyber, and we'll be back to you with another episode soon. Thank you all very much. And please join us for the next episode of CI Security's Cybersecurity Where You Are. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.
Looking to get ahead of your compliance-related costs? CIS Secure Suite comes with benefits, tools, and resources for building a sustainable governance, risk, and compliance program. Now through April 1st, save up to 20% on creating your GRC program with promo code GRC2024. Get started today at cisecurity.org/CIS-SecureSuite.